a great man. Frank Graham, Baseball Magazine, February 1947. It was reading such statements that got me started on this book. I came to a curiously late appreciation of the story of Walter Johnson, considering that he is my grandfather. But he died in 1946 when I was 8 months old, and my grandmother, Hazel Johnson, had passed away many years earlier. I saw quite a bit of his mother, my great-grandmother, Minnie Johnson, who lived to be 100 years old, and I knew his children, my mother, aunt, and uncles. But Walter and Hazel Johnson might as well have been 19th-century ancestors, little more than faces in old black-and-white pictures on the wall. It's not that I was unaware of his stature as one of the all-time baseball legends and Washington's greatest sports hero. I went to Griffith Stadium several times for ceremonies honoring Walter Johnson's memory, including an old-timers' day in 1959 when I stood on the first baseline representing the family. But I don't believe that my knowledge of him went much deeper than that of most kids my age growing up in the nation's capital during the 50s and 60s. It was our sad fate to have the perennially last-place Washington Senators for a team at a time when baseball was more important to kids than it is today. Other sports were barely a blip on the screen then, although my buddies and I treated the fabulous Boston Celtics as our own because Nancy Auerbach was a classmate and we had been to her house and met Red. But one of the few things all long-suffering Senators fans, myself among them, could point to with pride was that the greatest pitcher of all time had worn a W on his cap and sleeve his entire career. Our family did have the scrapbooks, 30 oversized volumes containing thousands of articles, letters, telegrams, and other materials collected and meticulously assembled by Hazel Johnson, but for decades they sat undisturbed in a cabinet in the living room. Perhaps their sheer number was daunting, or maybe it was the forbidding black binding, but for some reason not once did I, or anybody else for that matter, ever reach in, pull one out, and start reading, not even when baseball was just about the biggest thing in my life. Then, on a visit to the old home place one day years later, and again for a reason I can't explain, it might have been one of those Thanksgiving or Christmas dinners where everyone sits around afterward watching a football game, I did just that. Within minutes, I was hooked. Over the next few months, I went through the scrapbooks one by one, and it wasn't long before I realized that the major treatments of Johnson's life and career to that point, a warm-hearted but cursory 1948 book, Walter Johnson, King of the Pitchers, by sports writer and children's author Roger Treat, and several long magazine profiles, had only scratched the surface of a truly remarkable man and the fantastic adventure that was his life. A biography worthy of the subject had to be done, I felt. The material between the covers of those scrapbooks demanded it. Years of research followed to fill in periods not covered by the scrapbooks and to search out whatever other sources of information I could find. At times, it seemed that these efforts would never bear fruit, but my dream of a comprehensive and entertaining biography of Walter Johnson never disappeared. It's been a real joy and privilege to spend so much time with him, and I hope I have done his story justice. It deserves no less. Henry W. Thomas, Washington, D.C. Foreword. When Henry W. Thomas chose the Walter Johnson story as the subject of his work, he had a rare, special, motivational interest, a blood relationship. The man so often acclaimed through the generations as the greatest ever to grace the major league pitching mounds was the writer's grandfather. Thus was Thomas advantaged in his work. He not only dedicated himself to researching Johnson's career, he mined it and profited from his access to the nooks of the family history and remembrances, dating from those times when Walter Johnson was a farm boy, growing up on the plains of Kansas, through those years when Grandfather Johnson was putting more records in the books than any man who ever lived. The upshot? Henry Thomas has written a biographical gem. It touches every base of the legend. The Johnson story was often told by baseball authors, by magazine writers, and as excerpts in books, but never like this. Thomas has trumped them all. I, too, have dabbled in the Walter Johnson story, in newspaper columns for the Washington Post, and in series, and as a contributor to books, and had the good luck to be there in his later World Series years. Captivated was I, not only by his unmatched pitching skills, but by the manner of the man, his modesty, humility, and humanity, while surrounded by a game that in his era was the playing field of roughnecks. For 20 years they were synonymous, the Washington Senators and Walter Johnson, but it was in high irony. The image of the Senators, who gave rise to the vaudeville joke, Washington, first in war, first in peace, and last in the American League, was as the inept, hopeless teams of Johnson's early years, while Johnson, in contrast, was gaining his fame as the super pitcher of his time, one could make that all time, owner of the swiftest pitch ever known to the game, and inhibited always by his sensitivity that it could maim someone. For years, Walter Johnson was identified by baseball writers, in the slang of the time, as the Big Swede. Despite no Swedes in his ancestry, Johnson accepted the appellation without protest.
"I didn't want to offend anybody," Johnson once told me. "There are a lot of Swedes I know who are nice people."
This book is about that kind of man. Shirley Povich. Walter Johnson, Baseball's Big Train, by Henry W. Thomas. Chapter 1. Kid Johnson. When the Senators took the field, it was behind the broad shoulders of Walter Johnson, and this time their hero did not fail them. In danger in every one of the 4 innings that he worked, he rose superbly to every emergency. In each succeeding crisis, he became a little more the master, a little more the terrible blonde Swede of baseball fable. Twice he struck out Long George Kelly when the game hung by a thread so fine that thousands in the tense, silent throng turned their heads away with every pitch. To the victor belong the spoils. When future generations are told about this game, they will not hear about Barnes or Frisch or Kelly, or even about Harris or McNeely. But the boy with his first glove and ball crowding up to his father's knee will beg,
"Tell me about Walter Johnson."
Bill Corum, New York Times, October 11, 1924. Those assuming Walter Perry Johnson to be of Scandinavian origin could be excused the mistake. With his sandy brown hair, blue-gray eyes, fair complexion, finely chiseled facial features, and broad, strong frame over 6 feet tall, what else would they think? His Western Plains twang, though it lacked the lilting accent of the Nordic immigrant, would do nothing to change the impression. But Johnson's ancestry, as far back as it traces, is entirely of the British Isles. Johnson, Perry, Higby, Bradley, Sheldon, Doherty, Smith, McCollum, Cross, Lane, Skidmore. Mostly English, some Irish, Scotch, and Welsh. Of course, the long history of immigration into and conquest of Great Britain from the Scandinavian peninsulas suggests that in the longer view, the Swedish assumption might not be far off base after all. The predominance of fair features throughout the Johnson family, continuing to the present day, makes this seem all the more likely. Of his nationality, Johnson remarked,
"Well, to tell the truth, we're just about as plain, old-fashioned American as could possibly be."
And this is no exaggeration. He was a 10th-generation American on the side of paternal grandmother Phoebe Higby Johnson, their ancestor Edward Higby having arrived from England in 1645 to marry Jedediah Skidmore, who by that time had already been in the colonies for 10 years. The Johnson line went back at least 5 generations to Samuel Johnson of New Jersey during the Revolutionary period. His mother's forebears, the Perrys, were also in that area at about the same time. The Johnson and Perry families, in fact, took remarkably similar journeys across the country, from New Jersey to Pennsylvania, then to Ohio, and finally on to the Great Plains. They traveled the well-established route of migration to the West. The great rivers, the Allegheny, Ohio, Missouri, and Mississippi, served as the common highways, taking people to a new life in the territories. Johnson's maternal grandfather, John Lane Perry, survived 4 years with the 4th Pennsylvania Cavalry in the Civil War, fighting at Bull Run, Antietam, and Gettysburg. At war's end, he joined his parents in Ohio, and it was there he met Lucinda Bradley, whose own parents had died when she was an infant. They married in 1866 and moved the next year to Richmond, Indiana, where their first child...